Welcome to Take This Poem Podcast, where we explore the rich, wild things that good poems can do in the everyday lives of ordinary folks. I'm your host, Mary Guidis. Whether you're a longtime poetry lover like I am, or just barely interested, I invite you to take this poem. I hope it amends the soil of your life.
Hello, poetry friends. I've been on a jag lately, reading poems by a gentleman named Michael Chitwood, and have enjoyed them so much that I thought I'd pass a few along. This is from a collection called Search and Rescue. It's one of three collections of his that I've devoured this last month or so, and I've got a couple more on order. He reminds me a bit of another poet that I really like named George Bilger. He writes in a very accessible way. Bilger, I think, would be maybe the poet of the suburbs, and Chitwood is more a poet of rural and southern life. He was born and raised in Virginia and now lives and teaches and writes in North Carolina. His poetry is, again, like I say, pretty accessible, easy to understand, at least on the surface. On first hearing, it doesn't demand a lot of technical apparatus or skill on the part of the listener or reader. It's sometimes humorous, often humorous, and sometimes poignant as well. So I hope you enjoy these. Some of them speak of an era that's gone now, but I can remember. I grew up in a rural area, not in the South, but some of this still rings true. This first piece is called Want. There was a time when you would not go into town without calling around to see if anybody needed anything. Flour, molasses, salt, a prayer chain of needs. And people would tell you, oh yes, you could pick up some. A list was started and lengthened. You would be gone the better part of the afternoon. And when you got to your first stop, you sat in the car, the engine ticking as it cooled, and watched for a moment the storefront. Nothing checked off yet, nothing fulfilled. Relishing this come-to-town moment, knowing the sunlight through your kitchen window has come to rest on the linoleum, a fat pad of butter, and you didn't need to be there to see it. This one's called Catalytic Converter. When he was a boy, he rode with his father to a garage, really just a wooden shed. His father's new truck needed some kind of repair. The mechanic, a man in a dirty t-shirt and jeans that he kept tugging up under his belly, worked for cash. The boy heard his dad tell his mom that he would need cash. It was something about the exhaust. The shed's floor was concrete, stained by oil so that it looked like a flat map of the world, all the blotches like continents. While he worked, the mechanic told a story about his dog, which had limped out of the shed and gone around back when they first arrived. The mechanic said the dog had been running off, chasing after bitches and heat. His father didn't use words like that. So, the mechanic said, I took the top of a tin can and cut his balls off. That fixed it. The sound of the phrase, top of a tin can, lodged in the boy. The world leapt up from the stained floor, jagged, shiny, sharp, and populated by men such as this. This next one is a pretty odd one, but just go with it. I hope you'll find it amusing. It's called Chicken. He cradles the chicken with his right arm, holding it nested against his midsection. He takes a booth and puts the chicken beside him on the bench seat. The chicken settles, its feet disappearing under the billow of feathers. Everyone is trying not to be seen looking. The waitress pours a glass of water, but then sits it on the counter and pushes through swinging doors to the kitchen. After a moment, a man wearing a white paper hat comes back through the doors and goes over to the booth. "You have to take that outside," the paper hat man says. "What?" the man in the booth asks. "You know what, the chicken." "Why, don't you serve chicken here?" the man smiles. "We can't have a live chicken in here." "So only if it's dead?" "You know what I mean." "So if I kill it, we can stay?" "No." "Why not?" "The feathers, the feet, there are regulations." "Against feathers?" "Look, it's a hazard." "A chicken is a hazard?" The paper hat man puts his hands on his hips. His head makes a quick, short thrust forward, not unlike a chicken. "If it were a dog, could we stay?" "Only if you were blind." "If I were blind, a dog would not be a hazard?" "The dog helps blind people." "The chicken helps me. It keeps me calm." "How does a chicken keep you calm?" "Because it's calm, see?" The man opens his hand, palm up toward the chicken, which sits in a stately roosting posture. The paper hat man says, "Sorry, you still have to take it outside." "Then what?" "Whatever, put it in your car." "I walked here." "I'll get you a box to put it in while you eat." "It doesn't like confined spaces, and I would get nervous without it. I told you, it keeps me calm. It's my counterweight." "Your what?" "My counterweight. I have it to take care of, and that takes care of me." "Are you on medications?" "Medications didn't work. That's why I have the chicken. It's alive." "That's the problem." "No, that's the solution." "Look, I've got a job to do. I can't keep arguing. The chicken has to go." "Because it's alive?" "Yes." The man looks around at the other patrons who find their food or their silverware very interesting. The man gathers the chicken in his arms. The chicken is amenable to being gathered. At the door, the man turns and says to all, "Goodbye. I thank you for your kind attention. It is the most that can be hoped for." The next two are about a lake. And I'm assuming this is probably autobiographical, based on autobiographical experiences, possibly Chitwood's grandparents. It's an area in the Hollows, probably in Virginia, that was dammed and filled with a lake. And so whole swaths of farms and even maybe a small town or two are covered under that lake. This first one is very short. It's called Lakeside. It's like a stage, our view of the other side. Our seats are webbed, but from this remove, it's hard to tell exactly what's going on, or even who the actors are. Are they children or adults? Is that crying or laughter? The shout, "Beer's cold," or "Fear God." We to them are in the same play. And this is the last one. It's the title piece, and it's fairly long. So hopefully you can relax and just get into the narrative, so to speak. It's called Search and Rescue. Memorial Day weekend. The lake is thronged with boats and jet skis. Memories, water walkers. He's lost count of the drownings. It's all down there. Tobacco fields, the old home place. Crosscut saws, creek stones that marked unnamed graves. Wood stoves and chicken coops. Spinning wheels and chestnut cradles and coffins. The old rugged cross and all the yellowed almanac hokum. After the first frost, he found a hornet's nest latched to a low limb, which meant a mild winter. He brought it in and spent hours peeling off the gray, whispering layers. It was a kind of translation, unweaving the work of so many mouths. At the core of the nest was the comb, with its tiny furrows entombed. What to do now with this pile of paper? Too delicate to accept even the slightest mark. The ancient blank text kept mum. The barn was his get-gone, long empty and beginning to shed siding. It still smelled of harness and hay, of long field hours brought in. Mud daubers had hung their clay flutes just under the eaves. Swallow nests tufted the rafters, and the swallows carved the dusk. This was the use of disuse. Loft, grain bin, and stall organized the silent dimness. One summer, he found a litter of kittens in the manger. 5 fur blots, eyes squeezed shut, wiggling. A day or two later, their limp stillness, a tom had nearly slit each throat. 6 years old, he went with her to decorate the church. For Christmas, clapboard Baptist, sanctuary like a barn. Her parents had given the land to the faithful, though they had precious little land. They had to wait for another woman to come. She had the Virginia creeper they'd wind around the white candles in each sanctuary window. They sat in the front pew and waited. It was cold, and they kept their coats on. It was the best sermon he'd ever heard, the tall silence of the empty place, the smell of talc in her old coat. And when the crumbling old basement furnace finally kicked on, some dust leapt up from the vents and danced around the pulpit. After a week's visit, he finds, on the nightstand, a mound where his daughter peeled her sunburn, a small pyramid of skin. He was to be paid a penny per thistle. He was to keep count. The swing blade said tsk, tsk, like a frowning grandmother. By noon his hands were blistered. His arms that night would remember the swinging blade. He lost count sometime in the afternoon. How many thistles could a pasture hold? It was a riddle from a sphinx. The purple blooms on the spiky stalks were plundered by bees, honey for the combs. They troll for a drowning with a grappling hook, though the body, once it bloats, will rise. It's a courtesy search and rescue does for survivors, taking some action for the living. When the power company exec explained what they would be paid for the land to be underwater, then left in a black Lincoln Continental, his father said, "I reckon there's nothing to be done about it. Just have to live beside it. All the old thinking will be underneath." Even his way in words would be drowned. The boys on the stand behind mowers glide over the hillside across the cove. He doesn't speak their language. They don't speak his. But they know grass. They cross-hatch the green and glide like a stately procession of jackal-headed gods across a papyrus. The dam was sealed the year he was born. A monument to human engineering, the paper said. Sometimes at dusk, he stands on the bank and thinks, "You and me, Lake, we're the same age, and what we have underneath." The troll boats are out again, dragging their grappling hooks. Someone has come up missing. That's the story of our lives, he thinks. They're half throttle as they work a grid in what has no grid, the big cave of the water. He wonders if the two drowned rivers are still moving, still sliding in their beds beneath, water underwater. Dusk in its shepherd cloak is walking out. Search and rescue calls it a day. The hooks come up without their man. Cicadas sing like the shrill of the depths. There was the store with the screen door. The man with 3 days' growth of beard, always. How did he do that? Never clean-shaven. And the fat woman with her pencil stub and brown paper bag she totaled up tabs on. The oiled wooden floor cried for the pacing of this or that, what could be done without. Moses in a basket floating in the bulrushes. What were bulrushes? He clipped the picture with the safety scissors. His Sunday school teacher said there weren't any bulrushes in the mountains. Everything miraculous happened someplace else. After watching the news at noon, he goes out to the shop to work on the weed eater. He puts the shaft in the vise and starts to tinker. The carburetor's gunky. He thinks about his shifts at the mill, the banked hours he lives on now, the shop's tin roof ticks. His daughters live in other states. Glass baby food jars of saved nuts and washers line the dusty shelves. The bed was one of two strangenesses in the house. It was an odd contraption, too big for the bedroom, and chrome shiny, out of place under the stiff, yellowed portraits of a man and woman he didn't know. She rested there, the bed cranked up partway. She was an old queen on her throne, eyes shut, with a difficult choice to make. His father's father spent the afternoons with his head bowed over the Bible or a baseball game on the crackling Philco. Clouds slid their shadows through the windows, great fish quietly passing overhead. Live beside it. What he's done for 50-some years. On paper, he's wealthy. The summer people slide by, oiled bodies in pleasure craft, gunning of a torqued engine. The busy gray nest swallows hornets-like words returning to the mouth. Summer afternoons, he read. There was nothing else to do. Too hot to ride his bike. Tales of empires, great kings. From the porch, he watched the old red hay baler making its rounds in the field behind his grandfather's ruin of a barn. His father rented the field to a man who raised beef cattle. The square bales dropped from the baler's chute. The field was being organized into neat blocks. It's what we do, he thought. Arrange the grass, make stacks. At the field's edge, the rising water shimmered. He thinks it's barn light down there. The silt swirling like barn dust, seeming to climb the shafts of light that plunge in from above. Of course, it's going nowhere and everywhere all at once. It's murky, and the sound is like the blood you hear thrumming in your ears when all is very still. Then a smallmouth pocks a mayfly from the surface, and the spell is broken. Wavelets work out from the center, the bull's eye widening until it's gone.